All right. My name is Sarah Kendall. I'm here with my father, Irving Elliott, in Richfield, Minnesota. Today is Thanksgiving 2017.
Now, where do I start? Back when
I want to know how you got to begin your work in computers, Dad.
Oh, well, I was a chemical engineer in a battery factory, and I used to get holes in my clothing because of the acid, and some people were getting lead poisoning. So I thought any job could be much better than this. And so I heard from somebody that they were making giant computers over in St. Paul. And I didn't know much about that, but it sounded challenging. So I went over there and I said, I know a little about electronics, and I was wondering if you had a job for me.
So you had a degree from the U of M, but what was your degree in?
My degree was chemical engineering.
Chemical engineering.
And but I had mathematics and physics and a lot of general subjects. And so the person in charge of the hiring said, well, you can write instruction books telling people how to use these machines and how to fix them. And I said, I don't know anything about that. And he said, neither does anybody else.
It was all pretty new then, huh?
Yes, it was new to the world.
What year was this?
It was 1952, I think, or 1951. 1951, I think. The computer that they were working on was as large as a small auditorium, and it was 8 feet tall, and it had a platform on it, and under the platform was a 45 horsepower blower to keep it cool.
That was a problem. It got too hot.
And the whole thing was built out of vacuum tubes, and then Univac came along and said, you know, we like the way you people do business. We're going to buy you out.
What company was it you were with first?
Well, it was called Engineering Research Associates.
Okay.
And they were working on a government project. And so they this was in an old radiator factory. And they had a junkyard out in the back, and sometimes some of the vacuum tubes that were inside the computer became old, and they put them out in the junkyard, and the people that worked there would go out at noon and pick up the tubes and bring them home, because every drugstore had a tube tester. And if they were usable in your TV or whatever, you could save a little money by using the tubes. And somebody came along. I worked there about 2 years, and in that time...
Did you spend the whole time writing instruction manuals?
They used to have diagrams.
Oh.
And the diagram would tell what was in the computer, and some were, the diagrams were 40 feet long.
Wow.
And 4 feet wide. And my boss said, that's foolish. We need to put them in a book. And so my job was to squeeze all that information onto sheets of paper that were 3 feet by 4 feet. And so I learned what was inside the computer by doing that.
Did your engineering degree help in that?
Yes, yes it did. Uh-huh. And the machines could essentially add, subtract, multiply, and divide, and compare numbers to see whether they were equal or less or more. And programs are all written in a strange numeric language that 0 through 7. We didn't have any 8s or 9s.
So it wasn't binary, it was...
It was binary, but the 3 binary bits added up to 7 combinations or 8 combinations.
Wow.
And so everything was in this octal language, they called it.
Wow.
And we did... it was years before we had something that looked like English that told the computers what to do. And that became my goal. I wrote programs to allow people to write programs in a sort of English statements, like add A to B and put the answer in C.
So you created that programming?
Yes, I copied more or less what IBM was doing at first, and then later on we developed our own language to run the computer.
What did you call that?
Well, that was SPTRAN. Structured Programming Translator. SPTRAN. And so that I worked my way up the line, and first I was writing what engineers would write a description of what the circuits would do, and they weren't in general very grammatical, and so I would correct the grammar and learn a lot while I was doing that.
And that was all at UNIVAC?
From UNIVAC, a number of people jumped ship. They formed their own company called Control Data, run by the fellow that originally ran the UNIVAC area, and they changed the design enough, and one reason that they changed was that UNIVAC brought in their own computers. And their own computer was as large as a house. It had doors on it. You could walk inside and change the tubes. And finally, somebody developed the transistors. And each transistor was the size of a match head and took the place of a tube, which was about the size of a lemon. And so computers began to get smaller and smaller. And then when we formed this new company, the fellow that was in charge of the design, his name was Seymour Cray, he developed a computer that was about the size of a refrigerator, which was quite a reduction in size.
What were you doing for these computers then? What was your job during this time?
Well, I did the same kind of a job. I developed a program that allowed people to talk to the computers in sort of an English language, telling them what to do. And
was that a different language?
Yes, we developed a language that was specified by a committee they had an international committee that came up with a language, and they didn't tell us how to use it in the computer. That was my job.
So you it this wasn't SP Tran. This was a different
yes
language.
This was a language that was used to test aircraft parts, and we built testers. Oh, that was another control data moved, and I decided it was my turn to move, and I went to Honeywell, and Honeywell was making these testers to test aircraft, and so we ended up with a program that allowed us to test altimeters and other instruments, and usually, or before that, they would take all the instruments out of the aircraft, put them on a bench, and it would take like 2 weeks to test all the instruments. And we got it down to like 2 hours.
How did
instead.
You do that?
Well, we had these smaller computers that would be connected to a box, and the box had a big plug board on it. It was a thing that looked like a cribbage board, only it had hundreds of little pins on it, and wires, and the pins and wires would be connected to the instruments, and then it pushed the buttons, and in 2 hours all the aircraft parts were tested. So we saved a lot of time by doing that.
So going back to those big computers that were as big as a room, what kind of power did they have?
Well, they had a horsepower a blower that was 45 horsepower just to keep the thing cool. I don't know how much current the whole thing took, but probably was another dozen horsepower.
What could the computer output? What was the strength of the computer?
The what?
The strength? What could the computer do?
Well, the original ones that when I started, they could add two numbers together in a thousandth of a second. And people would say, "Where do you work?" And I said, "In a computer factory." And they said, "Computer? What does that do?" And I said, "Well, you can add two numbers together in a thousandth of a second." And they said, "Who in the world wants to do that?"
They had no vision, huh?
Yeah.
Did you ever think that computers would be like it is today?
No, they grew and grew. And one time we were on the computer, and instead of lights blinking, or originally we would punch cards or punch a piece of paper tape and put it in a machine and it would print. All of a sudden, somebody invented a television-like display where you could see what was going on inside the computer. And one time we were looking at that, and a face of somebody appeared on the screen. And they were in Boston, and we were in Minneapolis.
What year was that?
Oh, I think that was in... I think it was in 1960, but I'm
wow.
not sure.
Wow. So I remember you brought up punch cards. I remember you telling me about punch cards.
Oh, yes.
Tell me more about those.
Well, they had these punch cards, and they were the size of an old dollar bill. they were designed after the original size of a dollar bill. And they were made of thin cardboard, and they had little holes, and the holes were in columns, and each column represented a character, like A or 1 or 7. And so they would punch two holes in each column, and that would tell the computer what was going in or out.
Did they have to stay in a certain order?
Yes. The program, when you fed a program in or a data in, they were in a tray. And we had some laughable stories about the fellow that tripped and fell down the stairs with a tray full of cards. And so
how long did that set you back?
Oh, that I don't know, but we used the cards for a number of years, and then finally everything became typewriters. We had electric typewriters that talked to the computers, and some of the typewriters were run by manually typing, and some were run by magnetic tape. So the answers would be written on the tape, and then the tape would make the typewriter type all the answers out.
So you invented a couple languages for computers, and what did you spend the rest of your career in computers doing?
Well, mainly running back and forth from city to city, installing some of these programs and making sure that they work. And we had a lot of fun. Our crew would fly to Seattle and work on a computer, and then we'd fly to California and work on another one. And we had to work in St. Louis. Meantime, when we had time off, we'd go up in the Arch in St. Louis. And we saw a lot of the country, Florida, New York.
So this was before any companies owned computers. They were all purchasing them for the first time from you?
Yes. We were selling computers that were designed for special purposes. And
like?
Well, for aircraft, and one was weather maps. The all the weather conditions were noted from all over the country, and then the computer would draw a beautiful map with all the isobars and temperatures and everything else. So it took a lot of the work out of reporting or out of meteorology.
And you also sent some weather balloons or some balloons up as security.
Oh, yeah.
National,
yeah.
Security?
That was a little sideline. I got, I thought I was going to get a raise if I went to some other company. So I went to this other company.
Which company?
General Mills. And at that time, they were making giant balloons that were 150 feet wide. That's a short city block in width. And these big balloons were the shape of electric light bulbs. And they'd hang cameras underneath the balloons. And then they'd send them across the country. And the reason they did that is that they would plan to do that in Russia, over Russia. and take pictures. Well, we let some balloons fly. One trip, I took Lois along, and we went by train to Oregon, and then there the crew had an airplane, and they had a bunch of the balloons, and I designed something that hung on the one balloon, and we let it go, and it went up, and instead of going over the United States, it went up to Canada, and somebody in the Royal Air Force shot it down.
So they never made it all the way to Russia?
It never made it to Russia, but it wasn't supposed to. It was just supposed to be a test. And they dropped that. They dropped that project because of a plane that was designed to fly over Russia and take pictures instead. The plane was called a U-2, and that went like 30,000 feet up in the air and took pictures. And we went back down on the ground, and they reassigned everybody to the cereal making business. So for a short time, I was making puffed wheat and all kinds of cereal that was candy coated, which was a novelty then. And
what did you do for the? What was your contribution to making cereal?
Well, I just worked on a crew that Kellogg had Frosted Flakes. We didn't have Frosted Flakes. And so my boss bought a huge cement mixer, and we cleaned it all up and then put a little conveyor belt in so that the flakes, the corn flakes, would go up the little conveyor belt and drop into the mixer. And then my job was to make a batch of syrup. So I made a strong batch of syrup, and that went into the mixer, and the whole mess went around, and then it would drop onto the floor. And we all wore little white booties and white uniforms, and we had clean shovels, and we'd shovel it off the clean floor into barrels and then send it off to be tested. And I got tired of doing that, and I went back into the computer business.
Is that when you went to Honeywell?
Yes.
So you ended your career, or Honeywell was the last place you worked in your computer
career. Yes, I worked for Honeywell for 25 years and retired.
What did you do at Honeywell?
Well, worked on the aircraft testers and the language to run the testers. And
didn't you work on one of the fighter planes, too, for the government?
Well, yeah, we had a lot of different aircraft parts that were on being developed. So many, I can't remember the names of the different aircraft. But we saw some strange things in Georgia. They built the airplanes outdoors. There was an open field, and trucks would come up, and they'd drop materials off, And then they'd build a plane outdoors. And they built some of the very large planes that they didn't have room for indoors, like the C-5, which was a...
It's a huge cargo plane.
Yeah, a huge cargo plane. And then we also worked on submarines. That was out on the coast in California. They were making submarines, and in the submarine, they made it so that the submarine would shoot a torpedo at something, and if it missed, it would come back and they'd pick up the torpedo and use it a second time. Which sounded pretty scary, but...
Yeah, that sounds very dangerous.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But...
And you got to go to the NSA, too, with Honeywell, didn't you?
NSA?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember going in this... They crack enemy codes. And
are we spilling secrets, or is this okay to talk about?
Well, I was supposed to teach a class on how to use a computer, and they would you'd go out in the hall. You had to be accompanied by somebody, and but they had mean-looking guards with rifles and uniforms in the hall, and you'd walk a little ways and somebody would stop you, a guard would stop you, and then look at a picture of you hanging around your neck, and then he'd look up at your face and look at the picture and look at your face and look at the picture and decide that you were okay to pass. And so you had to do that, especially a few times when you had to go to the restroom. And it was kind of spooky.
So that was with Honeywell when you were working on all the aircraft.
Yes.
Yeah. You also won an award when you were working at Honeywell.
Oh, yeah. They called it the Sweat Award. Harold Sweat was a... owner of Honeywell at one time, and they had an award every year where they'd take a group of engineers or workers at Honeywell and give them a trip. And so my wife and I went to Europe and went to Germany and Austria and France and Liechtenstein and Austria, and had a great time.
And what was it you won the award for?
Implementing that special language that some committee had designed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so today is November 23rd, and a week ago, you had a birthday. How old did you turn?
93.
So, you've seen a lot of changes in computers.
Yes.
Do you still like computers? Silly question. I just had to ask it for the interview.
Well, everybody runs around with a computer in their hand. They're called a cell phone now.
What kind of cell phone do you have?
I have an Apple 6.
iPhone 6, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. And they're coming out with a version 10 now, which costs $1,000.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, but they do a lot. And
you're one of the few people I know your age that gets email and you're on the internet and... Mm. You kept up with everything really well. Yeah, I'd say that you have not let technology run too far ahead of you.
Oh, well.
What would you like to see a computer do in the future?
Well,
Or what do you envision them doing?
I imagine that keeping people alive, maybe in hospitals, they have a lot of devices now for keeping your breathing going and keeping your heart going, and I suppose that all these will be improved over time, and there'll be some communication changes. These are already pretty fantastic. You can talk from Hawaii to the United States. And,
is there anything you've seen happen that you didn't ever expect to see happen that still blows your mind that you can do?
Well, yeah, I think one of the odd things is the DNA. Now, when somebody is suspected of killing somebody, and they take little samples of blood or flesh or something, and then they put it in this computerized database, and they can find the person it belonged to, which is quite amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also have it so that on the version 10 phone, that you don't have to poke buttons. You just show your face and it identifies you and turns on. And that's quite a miracle.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for taking the time to tell us all about your history with computers. I know it's always been interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And when I was in high school, you wanted me to use the computer, use the word processor, and I didn't want to do it. I really wish that I had followed your lead and gotten to computers myself.
Yeah. Yeah, the women have been taking part in the computer world, and to a point where they used to think that the men were the only ones that could do this kind of work for some strange reason. And there was a movie about this recently.
Mm-hmm.
It was a team of women that did a lot of calculations for the government. And we had one girl that came in when I worked, and she looked kind of like Shirley Temple. She didn't look very smart. She looked like a little cutie. And we interviewed her and found that she was extremely smart, and she was one of the best programmers that we had. And she, you could explain something to her, and she'd say, "Oh, I see," and then she'd go ahead and do the work. And so,
what company was that hired her?
Well, that was with Honeywell.
Honeywell. Well, I give them credit for.
Yeah.
Hiring the best person for the job.
That's right. Uh-huh.
Oh.
She ended up marrying one of our crew, so she was not only smart with computers, she was smart in picking a husband.
Anything else you want to add?
No, I guess not. I've had a good life, good career. career, and I'm happily retired.
Thank you for letting me interview you, Dad.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right.
And what are you going to do with all that?